Ophian rebels, with Hunt in tow. And he'd never be free again. What Sandriel would do to him? He deserved it. He fucking deserved everything. Bryce said, if you're so concerned I'll do something stupid, why tell me at all? Fury's dark eyes scanned her again. Because I just thought you should know. Bryce turned to the fridge, yanked it open. Hunt dug his own grave. So you two weren't. No. His scent is on you, though. We lived in this apartment together for a month. I'd think it'd be on me. She'd handed over a hideous number of silver marks to have his blood removed from the couch, along with all traces of what they'd done there. A small, strong hand slammed the fridge door shut. Fury glared up at her. Don't bullshit me, Quinlan. I'm not. Bryce let her friend see her true face, the one her father had talked about, the one that did not laugh and did not care for anybody or anything. Hunt is a liar. He lied to me. Danica did some fucked up stuff, Bryce. You know that. You always knew it and laughed it off, looked the other way. I'm not so sure Hunt was lying about that. Bryce bared her teeth. I'm over it. Over what? All of it. She yanked open the fridge again, nudging Fury out of the way. To her surprise, Fury let her. Why don't you go back to Pangera and ignore me for another 2 years? I didn't ignore you. You fucking did, Bryce spat. You talk to June all the time, and yet you dodge my calls and barely reply to my messages. June is different. Yeah, I know, the special one. Fury blinked at her. You nearly died that night, Bryce, and Danica did die. The assassin's throat bobbed. I gave you drugs. I bought that mirth root, and I bought the Lightseeker. I don't fucking care, Bryce. I got too close to all of you, and bad things happen when I do that with people. And yet you can still talk to Juniper? Bryce's throat closed up. I wasn't worth the risk to you? Fury hissed. Juniper and I have something that is none of your fucking business. Bryce refrained from gaping. Juniper had never hinted, never suggested. I could no sooner stop talking to her than I could rip out my own fucking heart, okay? I get it, Bryce said. She blew out a long breath. Love trumps all. Too fucking bad Hunt hadn't realized that. Or he had, but he'd just chosen the Archangel who still held his heart and their cause. Too fucking bad Bryce had still been stupid enough to believe nonsense about love and let it blind her. Fury's voice broke. You and Danica were my friends. You were these two stupid fucking puppies that came bounding into my perfectly fine life. And then one of you was slaughtered. Fury bared her teeth. And I couldn't fucking deal. I needed you. I needed you here. Danica died, but it was like I lost you, too. Bryce didn't fight the burning in her eyes. You walked away like it was nothing. It wasn't. Fury blew out a breath. Fuck. Did Juniper not tell you anything? At Bryce's silence, she swore again. Look, she and I have been working through a lot of my shit, okay? I know it was fucked up that I bailed like that. She dragged her fingers through her hair. It's all just, it's more fucked than you know, Bryce. Whatever. Fury angled her head. Do I need to call Juniper? No. Is this a repeat of 2 winters ago? No. Juniper must have told her about that night on the roof. They told each other everything, apparently. Bryce grabbed a jar of almond butter, screwed off the lid, and dug in with a spoon. Well, have fun at the summit. See you in another 2 years. Fury didn't smile. Don't make me regret telling you all this. She met her friend's dark stare. I'm over it, she said again. Fury sighed. All right. Her phone buzzed and she peered at the screen door before saying, I'll be back in a week. Let's hang then, okay? Maybe without screaming at each other. Sure. Fury stalked for the door, but paused on the threshold. It'll get better, Bryce. I know the past 2 years have been shit, but it will get better. I've been there. I promise you it does. Okay, Bryce added, because real concern shone on Fury's normally cold face. Thanks. Fury had the phone to her ear before she'd shut the door. Yeah, I'm on my way, she said. Well, why don't you shut the fuck up and let me drive so I can get there on time, dickbag? Through the peephole, Bryce watched her get onto the elevator, then cross the room and watched from the window as Fury climbed into a fancy black sports car, gunned the engine, and roared off into the streets. Bryce peered at Syrinx. The Chimera wagged his little lion's tail. Hunt had been given away to the monster he hated and feared above all others. I am over it, she said to Syrinx. She looked toward the couch and could nearly see Hunt sitting there, that sunball cap on backward, watching a game on TV. Could nearly see his smile as he looked over his shoulder at her. That roaring fire in her veins halted and redirected. She wouldn't lose another friend, especially not Hunt. Never Hunt. No matter what he had done, what and who he'd chosen, even if this was the last she would ever see of him, she wouldn't let this happen. He could go to hell afterward, but she would do this for him. Syrinx whined, pacing in a circle, claws clicking on the wood floor. I promised Fury not to do anything stupid, Bryce said, her eyes on Syrinx's branded out tattoo. I didn't say I wouldn't do something smart. Chapter 71. Hunt had a night to puke out his guts. One night in that cell, likely the last bit of security he'd have for the rest of his existence. He knew what would happen after the summit, when Sandriel took him back to her castle in the misty mountainous wilds of northwestern Pangera, to the gray-stoned city in its heart. He'd lived it for more than 50 years, after all. She left the photo feed up on the hallway TV screen so he could see Bryce over and over and over. See the way Bryce had looked at him by the end, like he wasn't a complete waste of life. It wasn't just to torture him with what he'd lost. It was a reminder of who would be targeted if he disobeyed, if he resisted, if he fought back. By dawn, he'd stopped puking, had washed his face in the small sink. A change of clothes had arrived for him, his usual black armor, no helmet. His back itched incessantly as he dressed, the cloth scraping against the wings that were taking form. Soon they'd be fully regenerated. A week of careful physical therapy after that, and he'd be in the skies. If Sandriel ever let him out of her dungeons. She'd lost him once to pay off her debts. He had few illusions that she'd allow it to happen again. Not until she found a way to break him for how he'd targeted her forces on Mount Hermon. How he and Shahar had come so close to destroying her completely. It wasn't until nearly sunset that they came for him, as if Sandriel wanted him stewing all day. Hunt let them shackle him again with the Gorsian stones. He knew what the stones would do if he so much as moved wrong. Disintegration of blood and bone, his brain turned into a soup before it leaked out his nose. The armed guard, 10 deep, led him from the cell and into the elevator, where Pollux Antonius, the golden-haired commander of Sandriel's Triari, waited, a smile on his tan face. Hunt knew that dead, cruel smile well, had tried his best to forget it. Miss me, Athalar? Pollux asked, his clear voice belying the monster lurking within. The hammer could smash through battlefields and delighted in every second of carnage, of fear and pain. Most Vanir never walked away. No humans ever had. But Hunt didn't let his rage, his hatred for that smirking, handsome visage so much as flicker across his face. A glimmer of annoyance flashed in Pollux's cobalt eyes, his white wings shifting. Sandriel waited in the Comitium lobby, the last of the sunlight shining in her curling hair. The lobby, not the landing pad levels above, so he might see. Justinian still hung from the crucifix, rotting away.
We thought you might want to say goodbye.
Pollux purred in his ear as they crossed the lobby.
The Wraith, of course, is at the bottom of the sea, but I'm sure she knows you'll miss her.
Hunt let the male's words flow through him, out of him. They would only be the start, both from the Malleus and from Sandriel herself. The Archangel smiled at Hunt as they approached, the cruelty on her face making Pollux's smirk look downright pleasant. But she said nothing as she turned on her heel toward the lobby doors. An armed transport van idled outside, back doors flung wide. Waiting for him, since he sure as fuck couldn't fly. From the mocking gleam in Pollux's eyes, Hunt had a feeling he knew who would be accompanying him. Angels from the Comitium's 5 buildings filled the lobby. He noted Micah's absence. Coward. The bastard probably didn't want to sully himself by witnessing the horror he'd inflicted. But Isaiah stood near the heart of the gathered crowd, his expression grim. Naomi gave Hunt a grave nod. It was all she dared, the only farewell they could make. The angels silently watched Sandriel. Pollux. Him. They hadn't come to taunt, to witness his despair and humiliation. They too had come to say goodbye. Every step toward the glass doors was a lifetime, was impossible. Every step was abhorrent. He had done this, brought this upon himself and his companions, and he would pay for it over and over and—
Wait!
The female voice rang out from across the lobby. Hunt froze. Everyone froze.
Wait!
No. No, she couldn't be here. He couldn't bear for her to see him like this, knees wobbling and a breath away from puking again. Because Pollux strode beside him, and Sandriel prowled in front of him, and they would destroy her. But there was Bryce, running toward them, toward him. Fear and pain tightened her face, but her wide eyes were trained on him as she shouted again, to Sandriel, to the entire lobby full of angels, "Wait!" She was breathless as the crowd parted. Sandriel halted, Pollux and the guards instantly on alert, forcing Hunt to pause with them too. Bryce skidded to a stop before the Archangel.
"Please,"
she panted, bracing her hands on her knees, her ponytail drooping over a shoulder as she tried to catch her breath. No sign of that limp.
"Please, wait."
Sandriel surveyed her like she would a gnat buzzing about her head.
"Yes, Bryce Quinlan?"
Bryce straightened, still panting. Looked at Hunt for a long moment, for eternity, before she said to the Archangel of Northwestern Pangera,
"Please, don't take him."
Hunt could barely stand to hear the plea in her voice. Pollux let out a soft, hateful laugh. Sandriel was not amused.
"He has been gifted to me. The papers were signed yesterday."
Bryce pulled something from her pocket, causing the guards around them to reach for their weapons. Pollux's sword was instantly in his hand, angled toward her with lethal efficiency. But it wasn't a gun or a knife. It was a piece of paper.
"Then let me buy him from you."
Utter silence. Sandriel laughed then, the sound rich and lilting.
"Do you know how much?
I'll pay you 97 million gold marks."
The floor rocked beneath Hunt. People gasped. Pollux blinked, eyeing Bryce again. Bryce extended a piece of paper toward Sandriel, though the Malak didn't take it. Even from a few feet behind the Archangel, Hunt's sharp eyesight could make out the writing. Proof of funds. A check from the bank, made out to Sandriel, for nearly 100 million marks. A check from Jessica Roga.
Horror sluiced through him, rendering him speechless. How many years had Bryce added to her debt? He didn't deserve it, didn't deserve her, not for a heartbeat, not in 1,000 years. Bryce waved the check toward Sandriel. 12 million more than his asking price when you sold him, right?
I know how to do the mathematics.
Bryce remained with her arm outstretched, hope in her beautiful face. Then she reached up, Pollux and the guards tensing again, but it was just to unclasp the golden amulet from around her neck.
Here, to sweeten the deal, an Arkesian amulet. It's 15,000 years old and fetches around 3 million gold marks on the market.
That tiny necklace was worth 3 million gold marks? Bryce extended both the necklace and the paper, the gold glinting.
Please. He couldn't let her do it, not even for what remained of his soul.
Hunt opened his mouth, but the Archangel took the dangling necklace from Bryce's fingers. Sandriel glanced between them, read everything on Hunt's face. A snake smile curled her mouth.
Your loyalty to my sister was the one good thing about you, Athalar.
She clenched her fist around the amulet.
But it seems those photographs did not lie.
The Arkesian amulet melted into streams of gold on the floor. Something ruptured in Hunt's chest at the devastation that crumpled Bryce's face. He said quietly to her, his first words all day,
"Get out of here, Bryce."
But Bryce pocketed the check and slid to her knees.
"Then take me."
Terror rocked him, so violently he had no words when Bryce looked up at Sandriel, tears filling her eyes as she said,
"Take me in his place."
A slow grin spread across Pollux's face.
No, she'd already traded her eternal resting place in the Bone Quarter for Danica. He couldn't let her trade her mortal life for him. Not for him.
"Don't you dare!" The male bellow cracked across the space. Then Rune was there, wreathed in shadows, Declan and Flynn flanking him. They weren't foolish enough to reach for their guns as they sized up Sandriel's guards, realized that Pollux Antonius the Malleus stood there, sword angled to punch through Bryce's chest if Sandriel so much as gave the nod. The Crown Prince of the Fae pointed at Bryce.
"Get off the floor."
Bryce didn't move. She just repeated to Sandriel, "Take me in his place." Hunt snapped at Bryce,
"Be quiet."
Just as Rune snarled at the Archangel,
"Don't listen to a word she says."
Sandriel took a step toward Bryce, another, until she stood before her, peering down into Bryce's flushed face. Hunt pleaded,
"Sandriel."
"You offer your life,"
Sandriel said to Bryce, "under no coercion, no force." Rune lunged forward, shadows unfurling around him, but Sandriel raised a hand and a wall of wind held him in check. It choked off the prince's shadows, shredding them into nothing. It held Hunt in check, too, as Bryce met Sandriel's stare and said,
"Yes, in exchange for Hunt's freedom, I offer myself in his place."
Her voice shook, cracking. She knew how he'd suffered at the Archangel's hands, knew what awaited her would be even worse.
"Everyone here would call me a fool to take this bargain,"
Sandriel mused.
"A half-breed with no true power or hope to come into it, in exchange for the freedom of one of the most powerful Malachim to ever darken the skies, the only warrior on Midgard who can wield lightning."
"Sandriel, please,"
Hunt begged, the air ripping from his throat choked off his words. Pollux smiled again. Hunt bared his teeth at him as Sandriel stroked a hand over Bryce's cheek, wiping away her tears.
"But I know your secret, Bryce Quinlan,"
Sandriel whispered.
"I know what a prize you are."
Rune cut in.
"That is enough!"
Sandriel stroked Bryce's face again.
"The only daughter of the Autumn King."
Hunt's knees wobbled.
"Holy fuck,"
Tristan Flynn breathed. Declan had gone pale as death. Sandriel purred at Bryce.
Yes, what a prize you would be to possess.
Her cousin's face was stark with terror. Not cousin, brother. Rune was her brother, and Bryce was...
What does your father think of his bastard daughter borrowing such a vast amount from Jessup Aroga?
Sandriel went on, chuckling as Bryce began crying in earnest now.
What shame it would bring upon his royal household, knowing you sold your life away to a half-rate sorceress.
Bryce's pleading eyes met his, the amber eyes of the Autumn King. Sandriel said,
You thought you were safe from me. That after you pulled your little stunt when I arrived, I wouldn't look into your history.
My spies are second to none.
They found what could not be found, including your lifespan test from 12 years ago, and whom it exposed as your father, even though he paid steeply to bury it.
Rune stepped forward, either pushing past Sandriel's wind or being allowed to do so. He grabbed Bryce under the arm and hauled her to her feet.
She is a female member of the Fey royal household and a full civitas of the Republic. I lay claim to her as my sister and kin.
Ancient words, from laws that had never been changed, though public sentiment had. Bryce whirled on him.
You have no right, based upon the laws of the Fey, as approved by the Asteri.
Rune charged on.
She is my property, my father's, and I do not permit her to trade herself in exchange for Athalar.
Hunt's legs almost gave out with relief, even as Bryce shoved at Rune, clawed at him, and growled,
I'm no property of yours. You are a fey female of my bloodline,
Rune said coldly.
You are my property and our father's until you marry.
She looked to Declan, to Flynn, whose solemn faces must have told her she'd find no allies among them. She hissed at Rune,
I will never forgive you. I will never.
We're done here,
Rune said to Sandriel. He tugged Bryce away, his friends falling into formation around them, and Hunt tried to memorize her face, even with despair and rage twisting it. Rune tugged her again, but she thrashed against him.
Hunt,
she pleaded, stretching a hand for him.
I'll find a way.
Pollux laughed. Sandriel just began to turn from them, bored. But Bryce continued to reach for him, even as Rune tried to drag her toward the doors. Hunt stared at her outstretched fingers, the desperate hope in her eyes. No one had ever fought for him. No one had ever cared enough to do so.
Hunt!
Bryce begged, shaking. Her fingers strained.
I'll find a way to save you!
Stop it,
Rune ordered, and grabbed for her waist. Sandriel walked toward the lobby doors and the awaiting motorcade. She said to Rune,
You should have slit your sister's throat when you had the chance, Prince. I speak from personal experience.
Bryce's wrenching sobs ripped at Hunt as Pollux shoved him into movement.
She'd never stop fighting for him, would never give up hope. So Hunt went in for the kill as he passed her, even as each word broke him apart. I owe you nothing, and you owe me nothing. Don't ever come looking for me again.
Bryce mouthed his name, as if he were the sole person in the room, the city, the planet. And it was only when Hunt was loaded onto the armored truck, when his chains were anchored to the metal sides and Pollux was smirking across from him, when the driver had embarked on the 5-hour drive to the town in the heart of the Samathi Desert, where the summit would be held in 5 days, that he let himself take a breath. Rune watched as Pollux loaded Athalar into that prison van, watched as it rumbled to life and sped off, watched as the crowd in the lobby dispersed, marking the end of this fucking disaster. Until Bryce wrenched out of his grip. Until Rune let her. Pure, undiluted hatred twisted her features as she said again,
I will never forgive you for this.
Rune said coldly,
Do you have any idea what Sandriel does to her slaves? Do you know that was Pollux Antonius, the fucking hammer, with her?
Yes, Hunt told me everything,
Then you're a fucking idiot.
She advanced on him, but Rune seethed.
I will not apologize for protecting you. Not from her, and not from yourself. I get it, I do. Hunt was your... whatever he was to you. But the last thing he would ever want is... Go fuck yourself!
Her breathing turned jagged.
Go fuck yourself, Rune.
Rune jerked his chin toward the lobby doors in dismissal.
Cry about it to someone else. You'll have a hard time finding anyone who'll agree with you.
Her fingers curled at her sides, as if she'd punch him, claw him, shred him. But she just spat at Rune's feet and stalked away. Bryce reached her scooter and didn't look back as she zoomed off. Flynn said, voice low,
What the fuck, Rune?
Rune sucked in a breath. He didn't even want to think about what kind of bargain she'd struck with the sorceress to get that kind of money. Declan was shaking his head. And Flynn? Disappointment and hurt flickered on his face.
Why didn't you tell us? Your sister, Rune?
Flynn pointed to the glass doors.
She's our fucking princess. She is not,
Rune growled.
The Autumn King has not recognized her, nor will he ever.
Why? Deck demanded.
Because she's his bastard child. Because he doesn't like her. I don't fucking know,
Rune spat. He couldn't, wouldn't ever tell them his own motivations for it. That deep-rooted fear of what the Oracle's prophecy might mean for Bryce, should she ever be granted a royal title. For if the royal bloodline was to end with Rune, and Bryce was officially a princess of their family, she would have to be out of the picture for it to come to pass. Permanently. He'd do whatever was necessary to keep her safe from that particular doom, even if the world hated him for it. Indeed, at his friend's disapproving frowns, he snapped,
All I know is that I was given an order never to reveal it, even to you.
Flynn crossed his arms.
You think we would have told anyone? No. But I couldn't take the risk of him finding out, and she didn't want anyone to know.
And now wasn't the time or place to speak about this. Rune said,
I need to talk to her.
What came after he spoke with Bryce, he didn't know if he could handle. Bryce rode to the river, to the arches of the Black Dock. Darkness had fallen by the time she chained her scooter to a lamppost, the night balmy enough that she was grateful for Danica's leather jacket keeping her warm, as she stood on the dark dock and stared across the Istros. Slowly, she sank to her knees, bowing her head.
It's so fucked,
she whispered, hoping the words would carry across the water to the tombs and mausoleums hidden behind the wall of mist.
It is all so, so fucked, Danica.
She'd failed, utterly and completely failed, and Hunt was...
he was...
Bryce buried her face in her hands. For a while, the only sounds were the wind hissing through the palms and the lapping of the river against the dock.
I wish you were here,
Bryce finally allowed herself to say.
Every day I wish that, but today especially.
The wind quieted. The palms going still. Even the river seemed to halt. A chill crept toward her, through her. Every sense, fey and human, went on alert. She scanned the mists, waiting, praying for a black boat. She was so busy looking that she didn't see the attack coming, didn't twist to see a Crystallos demon leaping from the shadows, jaws open, before it tackled her into the eddying waters. Chapter 72. Claws and teeth were everywhere, ripping at her, snatching her, dragging her down. The river was pitch black, and there was no one, no one at all who'd seen or would know. Something burned along her arm, and she screamed, water rushing down her throat. Then the claws splayed, loosened. Bryce kicked, shoving blindly away, the surface somewhere, in any direction. Oh gods, she was going to pick wrong. Something grabbed her by the shoulder, dragging her away, and she would have screamed if there had been any air left in her lungs. Air broke around her face, open and fresh, and then there was a male voice at her ear saying,
I've got you. I've got you.
She might have sobbed if she hadn't spewed water, hadn't launched into a coughing fit. Hunt had said those words to her, and now Hunt was gone, and the male voice at her ear, Declan Emmett. Rune shouted from a few feet away,
It's down!
She thrashed, but Declan held her firm, murmuring,
It's all right.
It wasn't fucking all right. Hunt should have been there. He should have been with her. He should have been freed, and she should have found a way to help him.
It took half a moment for Declan to heave her out of the water.
Rune, his face grim, hauled her the rest of the way, cursing up a storm while she shuddered on the dock.
What the fucking fuck?
Tristan Flynn was panting, rifle aimed at the black water, ready to unload a hail of bullets at the slightest ripple.
Are you all right?
Declan asked, water streaming down his face, red hair plastered to his head. Bryce drew back into herself enough to survey her body. A gash sliced down her arm, but it had been made with claws, not those venomous teeth. Other slices peppered her, but... Declan didn't wait before kneeling before her, hands wreathed in light as he held them over the gash in her arm. It was rare, the Fae healing gift. Not as powerful as the talent of a medwitch, but a valuable strength to possess. She'd never known Deck had the ability. Rune asked,
Why the fuck were you standing on the black dock after sundown?
I was kneeling, she muttered.
Same fucking question.
She met her brother's gaze as her wounds healed shut.
I needed a breather.
Flynn muttered something.
What?
She narrowed her eyes at him. Flynn crossed his arms.
I said I've known that you're a princess for all of an hour, and you're already a pain in my ass.
I'm not a princess, she said at the same moment Rune snapped.
She's not a princess.
Declan snorted.
Whatever, assholes.
He pulled back from Bryce, healing complete.
We should have realized. You're the only one who even comes close to getting under Rune's skin as easily as his father does.
Flynn cut in. Where did that thing come from? Apparently, she said, people who take large quantities of synth can inadvertently summon a Crystallos demon. It was probably a freak accident.
Or a targeted attack,
Flynn challenged.
The case is over, Bryce said flatly. It's done.
The Fae Lord's eyes flashed with a rare show of anger.
Maybe it isn't.
Rune wiped the water off his face.
On the chance Flynn's right, you're staying with me.
Over my dead fucking body,
Bryce stood, water pouring off her.
Look, thanks for rescuing me, and thanks for royally fucking me and Hunt over back there, but you know what?
She bared her teeth and pulled out her phone, wiping water from it, praying the protective spell she'd paid good money for had held. It had. She scrolled through screens until she got to Rune's contact info. She showed it to him.
You?
She swiped her finger, and it was deleted.
Are dead to me.
She could have sworn her brother, her fuck you world brother, flinched. She looked at Deck and Flynn.
Thanks for saving my ass.
They didn't come after her. Bryce could barely stop shaking long enough to steer her scooter home, but she somehow made it. Made it upstairs, walked Syrinx. The apartment was too quiet without Hunt in it. No one had come to take his things. If they had, they'd have found that sunball hat missing, hidden in the box alongside Jelly Jubilee.
Exhausted. Bryce peeled off her clothes and stared at herself in the bathroom mirror.
She lifted a palm to her chest, where the weight of the Arkesian amulet had been for the past 3 years. Red, angry lines marred her skin where the Crystallos had swiped, but with Declan's magic still working on her, they'd be faded to nothing by morning. She twisted, bracing herself to see the damage to the tattoo on her back. This last shred of Danica. If that fucking demon had wrecked it. She nearly wept to see it intact, to look at the lines in that ancient, unreadable alphabet, and know that even with everything gone to hell, this still remained. The words Danica had insisted they ink there, with Bryce too plastered to object. Danica had picked the alphabet out of some booklet at the shop, though it sure as fuck didn't look like any Bryce recognized. Maybe the artist had just made it up and told them it said what Danica had wanted. Through love, all is possible. The same words on the jacket in a pile at her feet. The same words that had been a clue to her Redner account, to finding that flash drive. Nonsense. It was all fucking nonsense. The tattoo, the jacket, losing that amulet, losing Danica, losing Connor in the pack of devils, losing Hunt. Bryce tried and failed to wrest herself from the cycle of thoughts, the maelstrom that brought them around and around and around, until they all eddied together. Chapter 73. The last summit Hunt had attended had been in an ancient, sprawling palace in Pangaea, bedecked in the riches of the empire. Silk tapestries and sconces of pure gold, goblets twinkling with precious stones, and succulent meats crusted in the rarest spices. This one was held in a conference center. The glass and metal space was sprawling, its layout reminding Hunt of a bunch of shoeboxes stacked beside and atop each other. Its central hall rose 3 stories high, the stairs and escalators at the back of the space adorned with the crimson banners of the Republic, the long pathway leading to them carpeted in white. Each territory in Midgard held their own summit every 10 years, attended by various leaders within their borders, along with a representative of the Asteri and a few visiting dignitaries relevant to whatever issues would be discussed. This one was no different, save for its smaller scope. Though Valbara was far smaller than Pangaea, Micah held 4 different summit meetings, each for a separate quadrant of his realm. This one, for the Southeastern Holdings, with Lunathian's leaders at its heart, was the first. The site, located in the heart of the Samathi Desert, a good 5-hour drive from Crescent City, an hour for an angel at top flying speeds or a mere half hour by helicopter, had its own holding cells for dangerous Vanir. He'd spent the last 5 days there, marking them by the shift in his food, breakfast, lunch, dinner. At least Sandriel and Pollux had not come to taunt him. At least he had that small reprieve. He'd barely listened to the hammer's attempts to bait him during the drive. He'd barely felt or heard anything at all. Yet this morning, a set of black clothes had arrived with his breakfast tray. No weapons, but the uniform was clear enough. So was the message. He was about to be displayed, a mockery of an Imperial Triumphus parade, for Sandriel to gloat about regaining ownership of him. But he'd obediently dressed, and let Sandriel's guards fit the Gorsian manacles on him, rendering his power null and void. He followed the guards silently, up through the elevator, and into the grand lobby itself, bedecked in Imperial regalia. Vanir of every house filled the space. Most dressed in business clothes, or what had once been known as courtly attire. Angels, shifters, fae, witches, delegations flanked either side of the red runner leading toward the stairs. Fury Axtar stood among the crowd, clad in her usual assassin leathers, watching everyone. She didn't look his way. Hunt was led toward a delegation of angels near the staircase, members of Sandriel's 45th Legion, her Triari. Pollux stood in front of them, his commander status marked by his gold armor, his cobalt cape, his smirking face. That smirk only grew as Hunt took up his position nearby, wedged between her guards. Her other Triari were nearly as bad as the hammer. Hunt would never forget any of them. The thin, pale-skinned, dark-haired female known as the Harpy, the stone-faced, black-winged male called the Hellhound, and the haughty, cold-eyed angel named the Hawk. But they ignored him, which, he learned, was better than their attention. No sign of the Hind, the final member of the Triari,
though maybe her work as a spybreaker in Pangera was too valuable to the Asteri for Sandriel to be allowed to drag her here. Across the runner stood Isaiah and the 33rd, what remained of its triari. Naomi was stunning in her uniform, her chin high and right hand on the hilt of her formal legion sword, its winged crossguard glinting in the morning light. Isaiah's eyes drifted over to his. Hunt, in his black armor, was practically naked compared to the full uniform of the commander of the 33rd. The bronze breastplate, the epaulets, the greaves and vambraces. Hunt still remembered how heavy it was. How stupid he'd always felt decked out in the full regalia of the Imperial Army, like some prize warhorse. The Autumn King's auxiliary forces stood to the left of the Angels, their armor lighter but no less ornate. Across from them were the shifters, in their finest clothes. Amelie Ravenscroft didn't so much as dare to look in his direction. Smaller groups of Vanir filled the rest of the space, Mare and Demonaki. No sign of any humans, certainly no one with mixed heritage either. Hunt tried not to think of Bryce, of what had gone down in the lobby. Princess of the Fae. Bastard Princess was more like it, but she was still the only daughter of the Autumn King. She might have been furious at him for lying, but she'd lied plenty to him as well. Drummers, fucking hell, the goddamned drummers, sounded the beat. The trumpeters began a moment later. The rolling, hateful anthem of the Republic filled the cavernous glass space. Everyone straightened as a motorcade pulled up beyond the doors. Hunt sucked in a breath, as Jessiba Roga emerged first, clad in a thin-length black dress cut to her curvy body, ancient gold glittering at her ears and throat, a diaphanous midnight cape flowing behind her on a phantom wind. Even in towering high heels, she moved with the eerie smoothness of the House of Flame and Shadow. Maybe she'd been the one who told Bryce how to sell her soul to the ruler of the sleeping city. The blonde sorceress kept her gray eyes on the three flags hanging above the stairs as she moved toward them. On the left, the flag of Valbara. On the right, the insignia of Lunathian with its crescent moon bow and arrow. And in the center, the SPQM and its twin branches of stars, the flag of the Republic. The witches came next, their steps ringing out. A young brown-skinned female in flowing azure robes strode down the carpet, her braided black hair gleaming like spun night. Queen Hypaxia. She'd worn her mother's golden red crown of cloudberries for barely 3 months, and though her face was unlined and beautiful, there was a weariness to her dark eyes that spoke volumes about her lingering grief. Rumor had it that Queen Hecuba had raised her deep in the boreal forest of the Heliruna Mountains, far from the corruption of the Republic. Hunt might have expected that such a person would shy from the gathered crowd and imperial splendor, or at least gape a little. But her chin remained high, her steps unfaltering, as if she had done this a dozen times. She was to be formally recognized as Queen of the Valbaran Witches when the summit officially began. Her final bit of pageantry before truly inheriting her throne. But Hunt got a look at her face as she neared. He knew her, the medwitch from the clinic. She acknowledged Hunt with a swift sidelong glance as she passed. Had Rune known? Who he'd met with? Who had fed him research about the synth? The mare leaders arrived. Therian in a charcoal suit beside a female in a flowing gauzy teal gown. Not the River Queen, she barely left the Istros, but the beautiful dark-skinned female might as well have been her daughter. Probably was her daughter, in the way that Almer claimed the River Queen as their mother. Therian's red-brown hair was slicked back, with a few escaped strands hanging over his brow. He'd swapped his fins for legs, but they didn't falter as his eyes slid toward Hunt. Sympathy shone there. Hunt ignored it. He hadn't forgotten just who had brought Bryce to the barge that night. Therian, to his credit, didn't balk from Hunt's stare.
He just gave him a sad smile and looked ahead, following the witches to the mezzanine level and open conference room doors beyond. Then came the wolves. Sabine walked beside the hunched figure of the prime, helping the old male along. His brown eyes were milky with age, his once strong body bent over his cane. Sabine, clad in a dove gray suit, sneered at Hunt, steering the ancient prime toward the escalator rather than the steps. But the prime halted upon seeing where she planned to bring him, drew her to the stairs, and began the ascent, step by painful step. Proud bastard. The Fae left their black cars, stalking onto the carpet. The Autumn King emerged, an onyx crown upon his red hair, the ancient stone like a piece of night, even in the light of morning. Hunt didn't know how he hadn't seen it before. Bryce looked more like her father than Rune did. Granted, plenty of the Fae had that coloring, but the coldness on the Autumn King's face. He'd seen Bryce make that expression countless times. The Autumn King, not some prick lordling, had been the one to go with her to the Oracle that day. The one to kick a 13-year-old to the curb. Hunt's fingers curled at his sides. He couldn't blame Ember Quinlan for running the moment she'd seen the monster beneath the surface, felt its cold violence, and realized she was carrying its child, a potential heir to the throne, one that might complicate things for his pure-blooded chosen one son. No wonder the Autumn King had hunted them down so ruthlessly. Rune, a step behind his father, was a shock to the senses. In his princely raiment, the star sword at his side, he could have very well been one of the first starborn with that coloring of his. Might have been one of the first through the Northern Rift so long ago. They passed Hunt, and the king didn't so much as glance his way. But Rune did. Rune looked to the shackles on Hunt's wrists, the 45th's triari around him, and subtly shook his head. To any observer, it was in disgust, in reprimand, but Hunt saw the message. I'm sorry. Hunt kept his face unmoved, neutral. Rune moved on, the circlet of gilded birch leaves atop his head glinting. And then the atrium seemed to inhale, to pause. The angels did not arrive in cars. No. They dropped from the skies. 49 angels in the Asterian Guard, in full white and gold regalia, marched into the lobby, spears in their gloved hands and white wings shining. Each had been bred, hand-selected for this life of service. Only the whitest, purest of wings would do. Not one speck of color on them. Hunt had always thought they were swaggering assholes. They took up spots along the carpet, standing at attention, wings high and spears pointing at the glass ceiling, their snowy capes draping to the floor. The white plumes of horsehair on their golden helmets gleamed as if freshly brushed, and the visors remained down. They'd been sent from Pangera as a reminder to all of them, the governors included, that the ones who held their leashes still monitored everything. Micah and Sandriel arrived next, side by side, each in their governor's armor. The Vanir sank to a knee before them, yet the Asterian guard, who would only bow for their six masters, remained standing, their spears like twin walls of thorns that the governors paraded between. No one dared speak. No one dared breathe as the two archangels passed by. They were all fucking worms at their feet. Sandriel's smile seared Hunt as she breezed past, almost as badly as Micah's utter disappointment and weariness. Micah had picked his method of torture well, Hunt would give him that. There was no way Sandriel would let him die quickly. The torment when he returned to Pangera would last decades. No chance of a new death bargain or a buyout. And if he so much as stepped out of line, she'd know where to strike first. Who to strike. The governors swept up the stairs, their wings nearly touching. Why the two of them hadn't become a mated pair was beyond Hunt.
Micah was decent enough that he likely found Sandriel as abhorrent as everyone else did. But it was still a wonder the Asteri hadn't ordered the bloodlines merged. It wouldn't have been unusual. Sandriel and Shahar had been the result of such a union. Though perhaps the fact that Sandriel had likely killed her own parents to seize power for her and her sister had made the Asteri put a halt to the practice. Only when the governors reached the conference room did those assembled in the lobby move. First, the angels peeling off for the stairs, the rest of the assembly falling into line behind them. Hunt was wedged between two of the 45th's triari, the Hellhound and the Hawk, who both sneered at him, and took in as many details as he could when they entered the meeting room. It was cavernous, with rings of tables flowing down to a central floor and round table where the leaders would sit. The pit of hell, that's what it was. It was a wonder none of its princes stood there. The Prime of the Wolves, the Autumn King, the two governors, the River Queen's fair daughter, Queen Hypaxia, and Jessiba all took seats at that central table. Their seconds, Sabine, Rune, Therian, an older-looking witch, all claimed spots in the ring of tables around them. No one else from the House of Flame and Shadow had come with Jessiba, not even a vampire. The ranks fell into place beyond that, each ring of tables growing larger and larger, seven in total. The Asterian guard lined the uppermost level, standing against the wall, two at each of the room's three exits. The seven levels of hell, indeed. Vidscreens were interspersed throughout the room, two hanging from the ceiling itself, and computers lined the tables, presumably for references. Fury Axtar, to his surprise, took up a spot in the third circle, leaning back in her chair. No one else accompanied her. Hunt was led to a spot against the wall, nestled between two Asterian guards who ignored him completely. Thank fuck the angel blocked his view of Pollux and the rest of Sandriel's triari. Hunt braced himself as the vid screens flicked on. The room went quiet at what appeared. He knew those crystal halls. Torches of first light dancing on the carved quartz pillars rising toward the arched ceiling stories above. Knew the seven crystal thrones arranged in a curve on the golden dais, the one empty throne at its far end. Knew the twinkling city beyond them, the hills rolling away into the dimming light, the Tiber a dark band wending between them. Everyone rose from their seats as the Asteri came into view, and everyone knelt. Even from nearly 6,000 miles away, Hunt could have sworn their power rippled into the conference room, could have sworn it sucked out the warmth, the air, the life. The first time he'd been before them, he'd thought he'd never experienced anything worse. Shahar's blood had still coated his armor. His throat had still been ravaged from screaming during the battle, and yet he had never encountered anything so horrific, so unearthly. As if his entire existence were but a mayfly, his power but a wisp of breeze in the face of their hurricane, as if he'd been hurled into deep space. They each held the power of a sacred star, each could level this planet to dust, yet there was no light in their cold eyes. Through lowered lashes, Hunt marked who else dared to lift their eyes from the gray carpet as the six Asteri surveyed them. Therian and Rune, Declan Emmett, and Queen Hypaxia. No others. Not even Fury or Jessiba. Rune met Hunt's stare, and a quiet male voice said in his head, "Bold move." Hunt held in his shock. He'd known there were occasional telepaths out there among the Fae, especially the ones who dwelled in Avalon, but he'd never had a conversation with one. Certainly not inside his head. Neat trick. A gift from my mother's kin, one I've kept quiet. And you trust me with this secret? Rune was silent for a moment. I can't be seen talking to you. If you need anything, let me know. I'll do what I can for you. Another shock, as physical as his lightning zapping through him. Why would you help me?
Because you would have done everything in your power to keep Bryce from trading herself to Sandriel. I could see it on your face.
Rune hesitated, then added, a shade uncertainly,
and because I don't think you're quite as much of an asshole now.
The corner of Hunt's mouth lifted.
Likewise.
Is that a compliment?
Another pause.
How are you holding up, Athalar?
Fine. How is she?
Back at work, according to the eyes I have on her.
Good.
He didn't think he could endure any more talk of Bryce without completely falling apart. So he said,
Did you know that Medwitch was Queen Hypaxia?
No, I fucking didn't.
Rune might have gone on, but the Asteri began to speak. As one, like they always did. Telepaths in their own regard.
You have converged to discuss matters pertaining to your region. We grant you our leave.
They looked to Hypaxia. Impressively, the witch didn't flinch, didn't so much as tremble as the six Asteri looked upon her, the world watching with them, and said,
We formally recognize you as the heir of the late Queen Hecuba Enador, and with her passing, now anoint you Queen of the Valbaran Witches.
Hypaxia bowed her head, her face grave. Jessica's face revealed nothing, not even a hint of sorrow or anger for the heritage she'd walked away from. So Hunt dared to look at Rune, who was frowning. The Asteri again surveyed the room, none more haughtily than Rigelus, the bright hand. That slim teenage boy's body was a mockery of the monstrous power within. As one, the Asteri continued,
You may begin. May the blessings of the gods and all the stars in the heavens shine upon you.
Heads bowed further, in thanks for merely being allowed to exist in their presence.
It is our hope that you discuss a way to end this inane war. Governor Sandriel will provide a valuable witness to its destruction.
A slow, horrible scan through the room followed, and Hunt knew their eyes were upon him as they said,
And there are others here who may also provide their testimony.
There was only one testimony to provide, that the humans were wasteful and foolish, and the war was their fault, their fault, their fault, and must be ended, must be avoided here at all costs. There was to be no sympathy for the human rebellion, no hearing of the human's plight. There was only the Vanir side, the good side, and no other. Hunt held Rigelus's dead stare on the central screen. A zap of icy wind through his body, courtesy of Sandriel, warned him to avert his eyes. He did not. He could have sworn the head of the Asteri smiled. Hunt's blood turned to ice, not just from Sandriel's wind, and he lowered his eyes. This empire had been built to last for eternity. In more than 15,000 years it had not been broken. This war would not be the thing that ended it. The Asteri said together,
Farewell.
Another small smile from all of them, the worst being Rigelus's, still directed at Hunt. The screens went dark. Everyone in the room, the two governors included, blew out a breath. Someone puked by the sound and reek from the far corner. Sure enough, a leopard shifter bolted through the doors, a hand over his mouth. Micah leaned back in his chair, his eyes on the wood table before him. For a moment, no one spoke, as if they all needed to reel themselves back in, even Sandriel. Then Micah straightened, his wings rustling, and declared in a deep, clear voice,
I hereby commence this Valbaran summit. All hail the Asteri and the stars they possess.
The room echoed the words, albeit half-heartedly, as if everyone remembered that even in this land across the sea from Pangera, So far from the muddy battlefields and the shining crystal palace in a city of seven hills. Even here, there was no escaping.
Chapter 74. Bryce tried not to dwell on the fact that Hunt and the world knew what and who she really was. At least the press hadn't caught wind of it, for whatever small mercy that was. As if being a bastard princess meant anything. As if it said anything about her as a person. The shock on Hunt's face was precisely why she hadn't told him. She'd torn up Jessica's check, and with it the centuries of debts. None of it mattered now anyway. Hunt was gone. She knew he was alive. She'd seen the news footage of the summit's opening procession. Hunt had looked just as he had before everything went to shit. Another small mercy. She'd barely noticed the others arriving. Jessica, Therian, her sire, her brother. No, she'd just kept her eyes on that spot in the crowd. Those gray wings that had now regrown. Pathetic. She was utterly pathetic. She would have done it. Would have gladly traded places with Hunt, even knowing what Sandriel would do to her. What Pollux would do to her. Maybe it made her an idiot, as Rune said. Naive. Maybe she was lucky to have walked out of the Comitium lobby still breathing. Maybe being attacked by that Crystallos was payment for her fuck-ups. She'd spent the past few days looking through the laws to see if there was anything to be done for Hunt. There wasn't. She'd done the only two things that might have granted him his freedom, offered to buy him, and offered herself in his stead. She didn't believe Hunt's bullshit last words to her. She would have said the same had she been in his place, would have been as nasty as she could if it would have gotten him to safety. Bryce sat at the front desk in the showroom, staring at the blank computer screen. The city had been quiet these past 2 days, as if everyone's attention was on the summit, even though only a few of Crescent City's leaders and citizens had gone. She'd watched the news recaps only to catch another glimpse of Hunt, without any luck. She slept in his room every night, had put on one of his t-shirts, and crawled between the sheets that smelled of him, and pretended he was lying in the dark beside her. An envelope with the Comitium listed as its return address had arrived at the gallery 3 days ago. Her heart had thundered as she'd ripped it open, wondering if he'd been able to get a message out. The white opal had fallen to the desk. Isaiah had written a reserved note, as if aware that every piece of mail was read. Naomi found this on the barge, thought you might want it back. Then, he'd added, as if on second thought, he's sorry. She'd slid the stone into her desk drawer. Sighing, Bryce opened it now, peering at the milky gem. She ran her finger over its cool surface.
Athy looks miserable,
Lahaba observed, floating by Bryce's head. She pointed to the tablet, where Bryce had paused her third replay of the opening procession on Hunt's face.
So do you, Bibi.
Thank you. At her feet, Syrinx stretched out, yawning. His curved claws glinted.
So, what do we do now?
Bryce's brow furrowed. What do you mean? Lahaba wrapped her arms around herself, floating in midair.
We just go back to normal?
Yes. Her flickering eyes met Bryce's.
What is normal, anyway?
Seems boring to me. Lahaba smiled slightly, turning a soft rose color. Bryce offered one in return.
You're a good friend, Lily. A really good friend.
She sighed again, setting the sprite's flame guttering.
I'm sorry if I haven't been such a good one to you at times.
Lahaba waved a hand, going scarlet.
We'll get through this, Bibi.
She perched on Bryce's shoulder, her warmth seeping into skin Bryce hadn't realized was so cold.
You, me, and Ciri, together, we'll get through this.
Bryce held up a finger,
letting Lahaba take it in both of her tiny, shimmering hands. Deal. Chapter 75. Rune had anticipated that the summit would be intense, vicious, flat-out dangerous, each moment spent wondering whether someone's throat would be ripped out, just as it was at every one he'd attended. This time, his only enemy seemed to be boredom. It had taken Sandriel all of 2 hours to tell them that the Asteri had ordered more troops to the front from every house. There was no point in arguing. It wasn't going to change. The order had come from the Asteri. Talk turned to the new trade proposals, and then circled and circled and circled, even Micah getting caught in the semantics of who did what and got what and on, until Rune was wondering if the Asteri had come up with this meeting as some form of torture. He wondered how many of the Asterian guard were sleeping behind their masks. He'd caught a few of the lesser members of the various delegations nodding off. But Athalar was alert. Every minute, the assassin seemed to be listening, watching. Maybe that was what the governors wanted. All of them so bored and desperate to end this meeting that they eventually agreed to terms that weren't to their advantage. There were a few holdouts still, Rune's father being one, along with the mayor and the witches. One witch in particular. Queen Hypaxia spoke little, but he noticed that she, too, listened to every word being bandied about, her rich brown eyes full of wary intelligence despite her youth. It had been a shock to see her the first day, that familiar face in this setting, with her crown and royal robes, to know he'd been talking to his would-be betrothed for weeks now with no fucking idea. He'd managed to slip between two of her coven members as they filed into the dining hall the first day, and, like an asshole, demanded, "Why didn't you say anything about who you really are?" Hypaxia held her lunch tray with a grace better suited to holding a scepter. "You didn't ask. What the hell were you doing in that shop?" Her dark eyes shuddered. "My sources told me that evil was stirring in the city. I came to see for myself, discreetly." It was why she'd been at the scene of the Temple Guard's murder, he realized, and there the night Athalar and Bryce had been attacked in the park. "I also came to see what it was like to be ordinary before this." She waved with a hand toward her crown.
"Do you know what my father expects of you and me?"
"I have my suspicions," she said coolly, "but I am not considering such changes in my life right now." She gave him a nod before walking away. "Not with anyone." And that was it. His ass had been handed to him. Today, at least, he'd tried to pay attention, to not look at the witch who had absolutely zero interest in marrying him, thank fuck. With her healing gifts, could she sense whatever was wrong inside him that would mean he was the last of the bloodline? He didn't want to find out. Rune shoved away the memory of the Oracle's prophecy. He wasn't the only one ignoring Hypaxia, at least. Jessica Roga hadn't spoken one word to her. Granted, the sorceress hadn't said much, other than to assert that the House of Flame and Shadow thrived on death and chaos and had no quarrel with a long, devastating war. Reapers were always happy to ferry the souls of the dead, she said. Even the archangels had looked disconcerted at that. As the clock struck 9 and all took their seats in the room, Sandriel announced,
"Micah has been called away and will be joining us later."
Only one person, well, 6 of them, could summon Micah away from this meeting. Sandriel seemed content to rule over the day's proceedings and declared,
"We will begin with the mayor explaining their short-sighted resistance to the building of a canal for the transportation of our tanks and the continuation of the supply lines."
The River Queen's daughter bit her bottom lip, hesitating, but it was Captain Therian Kedos who drawled to Sandriel.
"I'd say that when your war machines rip up our oyster beds and kelp forests, It's not short-sighted to say that it will destroy our fishing industry.
Sandriel's eyes flashed, but she said sweetly,
You will be compensated.
Therian didn't back down. It is not just about the money. It is about the care of this planet.
War requires sacrifice.
Therian crossed his arms, muscles rippling beneath his black long-sleeved t-shirt. After the initial parade and that first day of endless meetings, most of them had donned far less formal wear for the rest of the talks.
I know the costs of war, Governor.
Bold male to say that, to look Sandriel dead in the eye. Queen Hypaxia said, her voice soft but unflinching,
Therian's concern has merit and precedent.
Rune straightened as all eyes slid toward the Witch Queen. She too did not back down from the storms in Sandriel's eyes.
Along the eastern borders of the Ragin Sea, the coral and kelp beds that were destroyed in the Sorvakian Wars 2,000 years ago have still not returned. The mayor who farmed them were compensated, as you claim, but only for a few seasons.
Utter silence in the meeting room.
Will you pay, Governor, for 1,000 seasons? 2,000 seasons? What of the creatures who make their homes in places you propose to destroy? How shall you pay them?
They are lowers.
Lower than the lowers,
Sandriel said coldly, unmoved.
They are children of Midgard, children of C'thona, the Witch Queen said.
Sandriel smiled, all teeth.
Spare me your bleeding heart nonsense.
Hypaxia didn't smile back. She just held Sandriel's stare. No challenge in it, but frank assessment. To Rune's eternal shock, it was Sandriel who looked away first, rolling her eyes and shuffling her papers. Even his father blinked at it and assessed the young queen with a narrowed gaze, no doubt wondering how a 26-year-old witch had the nerve, or what Hypaxia might have on Sandriel to make an archangel yield to her. Wondering if the Witch Queen would indeed be a good bride for Rune, or a thorn in his side. Across the table, Jessica Roga smiled slightly at Hypaxia, her first acknowledgement of the young witch.
The canal,
Sandriel said tightly, setting down her papers.
We shall discuss later. The supply lines.
The Archangel launched into another speech about her plans to streamline the war. Hypaxia went back to the papers before her, but her eyes lifted to the second ring of tables, to Therian. The Mare Male gave her a slight secret smile, gratitude and acknowledgement. The Witch Queen nodded back, barely a dip of her chin. The Mare Male just casually lifted his paper, flashing what looked like about 20 rows of markings, counting something. Hypaxia's eyes widened, bright with reproach and disbelief, and Therian lowered the paper before anyone else noticed, added another slash to it. A flush crept over the Witch Queen's cheeks. His father, however, began speaking, so Rune ignored their antics and squared his shoulders, trying his best to look like he was paying attention, like he cared. None of it would matter, in the end. Sandriel and Micah would get what they wanted, and everything would remain the same. Hunt was so bored he honestly thought his brain was going to bleed out his ears, but he tried to savor these last days of calm and relative comfort, even with Pollux monitoring everything from across the room, waiting until he could stop appearing civilized. Hunt knew Pollux was counting down the hours until he'd be unleashed upon him. So every time the asshole smiled at him, Hunt grinned right back. Hunt's wings, at least, had healed. He'd been testing them as much as he could, stretching and flexing. If Sandriel allowed him to get airborne, he knew they'd carry him. Probably. Standing against the wall, dissecting each word spoken, was its own form of torture. But Hunt listened, paid attention, even when it seemed like so many others were fighting sleep.
He hoped the delegations who held out, the Fae, the Mare, the Witches, would last until the end of the summit, before remembering that control was an illusion, and the Asteri could simply issue an edict regarding the new trade laws, just as they had with the war update. A few more days. That was all Hunt wanted. That's what he told himself. Chapter 76. Bryce had camped out in the gallery library for the past 3 days, staying well after closing and returning at dawn. There was no point in spending much time at the apartment, since her fridge was empty and Syrinx was always with her. She figured she might as well be at the office until she stopped feeling like her home was just an empty shell. Jessica, busy with the summit, didn't check the gallery video feeds. Didn't see the takeout containers littering every surface of the library, the mini-fridge mostly full of cheese, or the fact that Bryce had started wearing her athletic clothes into the office. Or that she'd begun showering in the bathroom in the back of the library. Or that she'd canceled all their client meetings and taken a new Arkesian amulet right from the wall safe in Jessica's office, the very last one in the territory, one of 5 left in the entire world. It was only a matter of time, however, until Jessica got bored and pulled up the dozens of feeds to see everything, or looked at their calendar and saw all the rescheduled appointments. Bryce had heard back about 2 potential new jobs and had interviews lined up. She'd need to invent some excuse to feed Jessica, of course. A medwitch appointment or teeth cleaning or something else normal but necessary. And if she got one of those jobs, she'd have to come up with a plan for repaying her debt for Syrinx. Something that would please Jessica's ego enough to keep her from transforming Bryce into some awful creature just for asking to leave. Bryce sighed, running a hand over an ancient tome full of legal jargon that required a degree to decipher. She'd never seen so many ergos and therefores and hence the followings and shall be included but not limited to's. But she kept looking. So did Lahaba.
What about this, Bibi?
The sprite flared, pointing to a page before her.
It says here, a criminal sentence may be commuted to service if...
We saw that one 2 days ago, Bryce said. It leads us right back to slavery. A faint scratching filled the room. Bryce glanced at the knock from under her lashes, careful not to let him see her attention. The creature was grinning at her anyway, like it knew something she didn't. She found out why a moment later.
There's another case beneath it, Lahaba said. The human woman was freed after...
Syrinx growled. Not at the tank, at the green carpeted stairs. Casual footsteps thudded. Bryce was instantly standing, reaching for her phone. A pair of boots, then dark jeans, and then snow-white wings, an unfairly beautiful face. Micah. Every thought short-circuited as he stepped into the library, surveying its shelves and the stairs leading to the brass mezzanines and alcoves, the tank and the knock who was still grinning, the exploding sunlight high above. He couldn't be down here, couldn't see these books.
Your Grace, Bryce blurted.
The front door was open, he said. The sheer power behind his stare was like being hit in the face with a brick.
Of course the locks and enchantments hadn't kept him out. Nothing could ever keep him out. She calmed her racing hard enough to say,
I'd be happy to meet with you upstairs, Your Grace, if you want me to phone Jessica.
Jessica, who is at the summit where you are currently supposed to be.
Down here is fine.
He slowly stalked over to one of the towering shelves. Syrinx was shaking on the couch. Lahaba hid behind a small stack of books. Even the animals in their various cages and small tanks cowered. Only the knock kept smiling.
Why don't you have a seat, Your Grace? Bryce said,
scooping takeout containers into her arms, not caring if she got chili oil on her white t-shirt, only that Micah got the fuck away from the shelves and those precious books. He ignored her
examining the titles at eye level.
Erd save her.
Bryce dumped the takeout containers into the overflowing trash can.
We have some fascinating art upstairs. Perhaps you can tell me what you're looking for.
She glanced at Lahaba, who had turned a startling shade of cyan, and shook her head in a silent warning to be careful. Micah folded his wings and turned to her.
What I'm looking for?
Yes, she breathed.
He pinned her with those icy eyes.
I'm looking for you.
Today's meeting was by far the worst, the slowest. Sandriel delighted in leading them in circles, lies and half-truths spewing from her lips as if savoring the kill soon to come, the moment they yielded everything to her and the Asteri's wishes. Hunt leaned against the wall, standing between the Asterian guards in their full regalia, and watched the clock inch toward 4. Rune looked like he'd fallen asleep half an hour ago. Most of the lower-level parties had been dismissed, leaving the room barely occupied. Even Naomi had been sent back to Lunathian to make sure the 33rd remained in shape. Only skeleton staff and their leaders remained, as if everyone now knew this was over, that this republic was a sham. Either one ruled or one bowed.
Opening a new port along the eastern coastline of Valbara, Sandriel said for the 100th time, would allow us to build a secure facility for our aquatic legion.
A phone buzzed. Jessup Aroga, to his surprise, pulled it from an inner pocket of the gray blazer she wore over a matching dress. She shifted in her seat, angling the phone away from the curious male to her left. A few of the other leaders had noticed Roga's change in attention. Sandriel kept talking, unaware, but Rune had stirred at the sound and was looking at the woman. So was Fury, seated 2 rows behind her. Jessica's thumbs flew over her phone, her red-painted mouth tightening as she lifted a hand. Even Sandriel shut up.
Roga said, I'm sorry to interrupt, Governor, but there's something that you, that all of us, need to see.
He had no rational reason for the dread that began to curl in his stomach. Whatever was on her phone could have been about anything, yet his mouth dried up.
What?
Sabine demanded from across the room. Jessica ignored her and glanced to Declan Emmett.
Can you link what's on my phone to these screens?
She indicated the array of them throughout the room. Declan, who had been half asleep in the circle behind Rune, instantly straightened.
Yeah, no problem.
He was smart enough to look to Sandriel first, and the Archangel rolled her eyes but nodded. Declan's laptop was open a heartbeat later. He frowned at what popped up on the laptop, but then he hit a button and revealed dozens of different video feeds, all from Griffin Antiquities. In the lower right corner, in a familiar library, Hunt forgot to breathe entirely. Especially as Jessica's phone buzzed again, and a message, a continuation of a previous conversation, it seemed, popped up on the screens. His heart stalled at the name. Bryce Quinlan. His heart wholly stopped at the message.
Are the feeds on yet?
What the fuck?
Rune hissed. Bryce was standing in front of the camera, pouring what seemed